Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Record for Wednesday, March 18th, 2026. We begin our reading on the front page, big headline, Building Momentum. Second TIF district could be created soon to make way for developments. Paxton. Paxton Mayor Bill Engle told City Council members on Tuesday, March 10th, that they should be prepared to talk further soon about the potential establishment of the city's second tax increment financing, TIF, district, which would comprise land both north and south of West Ottawa Road, where developers have proposed building a gas station and a sprawling three-phase subdivision. At this point in time, I would say that we need to probably have a discussion about having a TIF 2 started for some of the other projects that we're considering now, Engle told the two aldermen present for the annual meeting of the Joint Review Board, the JRB, for the city's first TIF district. The current TIF will expire in 2035, and it won't be enough to take care of what we need to do on the other two projects. So I think that's going to be something that we're going to have to be thinking about pretty darn quick. Engle advised the same during the council's monthly meeting later that same day as he updated aldermen about what had occurred at the afternoon's JRB meeting. We did mention that we may want to be sitting down here pretty quick to talk about a TIF-T to accommodate two larger projects that we're currently working on, Engle told the council. We're talking about sooner than later. After the meetings, Engle confirmed that the second TIF district would comprise the land involved in two separate developments along the Ottawa Road corridor east of Interstate 57 interchange on Paxton's southwest side. The construction of a residential subdivision on 328 acres of farmland just south of the stretch of Ottawa Road that includes the Paxton Church of Christ and businesses like Monocle's Pizza and Subway. As proposed by United Developers, a company owned by Christy Warner Flugmacher and her uncle, Gene Warner, the three-phase project would also include some commercial development and an assisted living or independent living facility. All of the involved land is owned by Joseph H. Warner Dynasty Trust and the Gerald E. Warner Dynasty Trust. And the construction of a gas station with 12 gas pumps, 3 electrical vehicle charging stations, and a fast food restaurant of an undisclosed national chain to the north of Ottawa Road and just west of Hardee's and east of Oakwood and Fire Pizza. The commercial development would be built at the one-time site of the Paxton Auto Laundry and Lube Center at 580 South Cherry Street, plus on two grass parcels at 552 and 560 South Perry Street. The developer, Paxton Commercial Investment Group, LLC, based in nearby Monticello, recently cleared the involved ground. The building's gone and all the trees are gone, Engle told the council. Everything is looking good, and they want to get started talking about some things as quickly as they can, trying to get something going, yet pretty darn quick. Notably, when a second TIF district was initially suggested in 2024, it was expected to comprise only the land for the subdivision development, not the land for the gas station development as well. The plans have since changed to include both developments, though Engle confirmed. Because the land for the subdivision's first two phases is currently included in the city's first TIF district that was established in 2012 and is set to expire in 2035, the land would need to be removed from the first TIF district when the new one is created for the next 23 years. Also, the city would need to annex a couple of hundred of acres of existing farmland comprising the subdivision's third phase and finalized redevelopment agreements negotiated by both United Developers and Paxton Commercial Investment Group. At some point, the city also plans to construct an extension of Elm Street south from Ottawa Road, which is also a state highway, Illinois 9, to allow for access to the proposed subdivision. The street extension, which was originally expected to happen last year at an estimated cost of $375,000, was the topic of a meeting scheduled for 10 a.m. Wednesday, March 11th, between city staff, engineers from the Clark Dietz engineering firm enlisted by the city, and representatives of United Developers. Things we are going to discuss include traffic projections coming out of that subdivision based on their Phase 1 development, Michael Livermore, a senior client advisor for Clark Dietz, told Alderman. We do have to make projections for the first 10 years of development as part of the IDOT permitting, which we will get an update from the developer as to what they have done. We should then start coordination of design and any right-of-way acquisition that would need to occur for a new street coming off of Route 9 to the entrance of that subdivision. The subdivision development was originally proposed by the late Joe Warner prior to the establishment of the city's first TIF district in December 2012. While the development was stalled for more than a decade after Mr. Warner died in 2013, his daughter, Warner Flugmacher, and his younger brother, Gene, never gave up on the project and ultimately revived those projects in 2024. The 15-acre first phase of the subdivision development would include 18 townhouse units, 8 single-family dwellings, and 4 duplexes, Ingalls said last fall. Phase 2 would be built later into the south of Phase 1, featuring a large 8-acre central park surrounded by homes, plus some commercial development to the north and west of those residences, including possibly restaurants or retail outlets and an assisted living or independent living facility, developers have said. Phase 3, if eventually built, would include bigger residential lots south of Phase 2, and would also include walking trails and perhaps a stormwater detention basin behind the homes. Right. And speaking of TIF districts, back on the front page, we have another article. Paxton's first TIF district eclipses $1 million in tax increment generated. Paxton. More than midway through its 23-year life span, Paxton's first tax increment financing district achieved a long-awaited milestone in fiscal year 2025, finally eclipsing the $1 million mark in tax increment generated by property improvements downtown and along West Ottawa Road around the Interstate 57 interchange. The $319,070 in tax increment brought into the city's special tax allocation fund last fiscal year, which began May 1, 2024 and ended April 30, 2025, pushed the 13-year total for the TIF district since its establishment in 2012 to $1,220,798, according to City Attorney Tony Shearing. Shearing highlighted the fact, among others, while reviewing the TIF district's annual report for the last fiscal year during a meeting of the TIF district's Joint Review Board on the afternoon of Tuesday, March 10th at City Hall. He did so again later that evening during the City Council's monthly meeting. We're in a really good position with the TIF, Shearing told Alderman, appearing via video and screens in the council chambers. Shearing also noted that the tax increment generated in fiscal year 2025 increased substantially by more than $106,000 from the $212,292 in revenue collected in fiscal year 2024. It was just a very good year overall for the TIF, Shearing said. The TIF district is also generating more interest than in past years, Shearing added, noting that the $4,566 in interest generated in fiscal year 2025 is up slightly from the $4,475 generated the previous fiscal year and makes up almost half of the $9,341 brought in overall. The revenue figures for the last fiscal year compare with expenses of $173,626 incurred, as resulting in a net income of $150,111 and a year-end fund balance of $268,812, up from a starting balance of $118,801, Schering said. Back in 2012, the TIF District's redevelopment plan had projected substantially higher redevelopment project costs, totaling some $73.8 million. Those projections anticipated the development of a large residential subdivision along West Ottawa Road that is yet to happen, though resulting in less growth and subsequently less revenue than once anticipated, Schering noted. That number obviously is extremely high, Schering said. We're now far enough into the TIF that I can think we can say with some confidence that we're likely not to generate that level of increment within the TIF. Even so, Schering said the TIF district has been serving its intended purpose, especially downtown, and especially over the last few years. Since the start of fiscal year 2022, as of May 1, 2021, the city has entered into or completed 29 redevelopment projects for a total over the life of the TIF of 42, Schering said. So that gives you an idea of just how active the city has been over the last few years to get projects going and get things moving downtown. There's a substantial number of projects to enter into over a much longer period than that, so the city has been very, very busy. I think the Mayor Bill Ingold and Controller-Treasurer Tammy Jensen have been working extremely hard to get the work done within the TIF. Ingold said there are 12 redevelopment agreements still in place and current as of today. We have two more to talk about, Ingold said, noting that he hoped both would be ready for the Council's consideration in April. Like Tony said, we're trying to keep the downtown looking as good as we can, Ingold said. Besides Ingold, Schering, and a Ford County Chronicle reporter, the only people present for the 25-minute joint review board meeting, which was required by the state's Tax Increment Allocation Redevelopment Act, were Alderman Kristen Larson and Joe Reinhart and Paxton Main Street Executive Director Donna Pepper. The joint review board, which is comprised of representatives of each taxing district that overlaps the TIF district, plus one public member, is expected to meet again later this calendar year to review the TIF district's annual report for the current fiscal year that ends next month. We turn back to the front page with a story from LODA. Ex-trustee, candidate for mayor, arrested for battery. After village board meeting, J.R. Tasek confronts town officials, chest bumps trustee, according to witnesses. LODA. Donald J.R. Tasek, a former village trustee and one-time candidate for village president, was arrested for misdemeanor battery last Wednesday night after allegedly chest bumping a trustee amid a heated confrontation at Village Hall following a town board meeting. Iroquois County Sheriff's deputies arrested Tasek, 66, at his home at 207 North Poplar Street in LODA around 9:38 p.m., and he was released from the county jail in Watseka at midnight with a notice to appear in court, according to the sheriff's office. Iroquois County Circuit Court records show Tasek was formally charged Friday with one count of battery, a Class A misdemeanor, and is due in court at 9:30 a.m. April 13th. When reached Thursday for comment, Tasek declined. Village President John Zalliker said Wednesday's incident happened after trustees adjourned their monthly meeting and Tasek approached the tables where they and village attorney Dale Stroh were seated and then began yelling at Stroh. I told him to get out, Zalliker said Thursday. It didn't even faze him. And then trustee Gene Breeden, Jr. said to Tasek, come on, J.R., let's go. And that's when he went at Gene. Trustee Sandy Coffey, also a Ford County Chronicle correspondent, said she witnessed the entire incident. Gene Breeden told him, JR, the meeting's over. You need to leave. And JR says, so? Coffey said Thursday. And then Tasek turned back around at the lawyer and said something to the lawyer, and then he turned around and started walking like he was going to leave, and he gets right up in Breeden's face and yells, boo, and then laughs, and then butts him, chest-butted him, belly-buttoned him, however he did it. Zaliker, who at the same time was having a conversation with former trustee and village president Carol Arsenault, said it all broke out really fast. Zaliker said he did not get the best view as he was looking at JR's back, but it appeared Tasek butted into Gene. I saw Tasek's hands go up in the air, and I saw him lunge at Gene, and Gene go backward a step, basically, Zaliker said. But there was physical contact. Tasek then left the village hall with his wife, former village clerk Regina Tasek, before his wife then re-entered, trying to say that she was the one that hit Gene. Regina and J.R. Tasek were pretty close to each other during the exchange, Zaliker said. Regina was very upset during the public speaking portion of the meeting and had a lot to say toward different public board members, Zaliker noted. Immediately after the meeting, her husband apparently had a lot to say to certain officials, too, in what ended up as a big argument that didn't need to happen, Zaliker said. I don't know what exactly he was yelling at the attorney about, Zaliker said. Dale was very shaken and left immediately. He didn't want no part of it. Following J.R. Tasek's arrest, Zaliker said deputies told him that both J.R. and Regina Tasek have been trespassed from Village Hall. They're upset about everything, and I just hope that they can get some help and can learn to conduct themselves a little bit better in public, Zaliker said. I don't like this. I wish it wouldn't happen. I wish there was another way we could have dealt with it. But it's just been getting worse and worse. It's been building. Just 4 months before Wednesday's incidents, sheriff's deputies were called to Village Hall after J.R. Tasek accused trustees of breaking the Open Meetings Act and told them to watch yourselves as he pointed to each repeating you and you. Tasek, who left the building before deputies' arrival, was not arrested following that incident. Since then, he had not attended any board meetings until Wednesday night, Zaliker said. This is just a sad thing for the town, because it's not the way we should have meetings go. And it's been going on for a long time, you know, with him getting upset about stuff and carrying on. It's just sad. We're trying to get stuff done, to get work done for the community and take care of business. And it's really hard to do when there's constant commotion in the meetings. It's sad. It's just a sad day for Loda. A former village trustee, J.R. Tasek, ran unsuccessfully for the village president's post last year when Zaliker won the election to replace Arsenault. Zaliker received 41 votes, 48.2% of the 85 votes cast between the four candidates, with Tasek receiving 25. Tasek's wife, meanwhile, was defeated in her bid for a trustee seat after not seeking re-election as the village clerk. In his written response to a Ford County Chronicle survey ahead of last April's consolidated election, J.R. Tasek said he was retired. He said he formerly was employed at Loda's water plant operator as a semi-driver and as a ramp supervisor for an airline in Salt Lake City, Utah. The village deserves a mayor who knows how to run a meeting, following the rules of order, will pass a budget, and will enforce all village ordinances, Tasek said. Iroquois County Circuit Court online records show that J.R. and Regina Tasek sought an order of protection against Zaliker in 2014, but a judge declined to issue one. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, March 18th. Eldon L. Davis, Paxton. Eldon Leonard Davis, 66, of Paxton, died Saturday, March 7th, at his home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at the time of publication. Rodney Emberson, Paxton. Rodney E. Emberson, 82, of Paxton, died Tuesday, March 10th, at Gibson Area Hospital in Gibson City. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Paxton Fire Department. Betty N. E. Kindgren, Paxton. Betty E. Kindgren, 95, of Paxton, died at 4:20 a.m. Friday, March 13th at Goldwater Care in Gibson City. Funeral services were held Wednesday, March 18th at the First Lutheran Church in Paxton, with the Reverend Deborah Domeyer officiating. Burial followed in Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Memorials may be made to the First Lutheran Church in Paxton. Eldridge L. Potts, Ashcombe. Eldridge Lee L. Potts, 88, of Ashcombe, died Wednesday, March 11th at the Veterans Administration Home in Manteno. Visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. Friday, March 20th, and from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, March 21st, at the Knapp Funeral Home in Clifton. A funeral service will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, March 21st, at the funeral home, with Dr. Chauncey Latimer, Jr. officiating. Burial will follow at the Ashcombe Township Cemetery, with graveside military rights accorded by the Central Veterans of Foreign Wars and the Ashcombe American Legion posts. Memorials may be made to the Ashcombe Fire Department, the Ashcombe Police Department, or Uplifted Care. Larry W. Sexton, Paxton. Larry William Sexton, 76, of Paxton, died at 10:50 p.m. Tuesday, March 10th at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton Senior Living. Funeral services were held Thursday, March 19th at the Pueblo Lindo Event Center on North Railroad Avenue in Paxton. Burial will be in Pine Ridge Cemetery in rural Loda at a later date. Memorials may be made to Accolade Healthcare of Paxton Senior Living or to the Paxton Masonic Lodge. Leslie E. Simmons, Rankin. Leslie E. Les E. Simmons, 66, of Rankin, died Thursday, March 12th. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at the time of publication. Connie J. Weekman, Roberts. Connie J. Weekman, 63, of Savoy, formerly of Roberts, died Friday, March 13th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A private graveside service will be held at Lyman Township Cemetery in Roberts. Memorial contributions can be made to Gibson Area Hospital in Gibson City. We return to the front page for a story with a headline reading, Coming Soon, Enforcement of City's Vacant Building Ordinance. Council approved ordinance 4 years ago prohibiting vacant downtown storefronts. Paxton. The once proud A.J. Lawrence Building in downtown Paxton, long ago bustling with activity, remains vacant today, just as it has for, well, every day this century, it seems. Signs of its glory days, like the old business name Lawrence's, spelled out in floor tiles at its front entrance, contrast with the unsightly black tarp covering its windows and doors. For decades, the historic brick building in the 100 block of North Market Street, named for one of Ford County community's most prominent early businessmen, has reportedly been used only for storage. Meanwhile, signs of a more productive future are nowhere to be seen. In particular, the ones that say coming soon, that were taped to its windows for many months, if not years, and became the subject of sarcastic jokes amongst skeptical residents who had already been losing their patience. Nearly 4 years after the city council responded to complaints about that property and other vacant storefronts downtown by approving a new ordinance prohibiting them from sitting empty and unused for prolonged periods, the city has not enforced the ordinance, though, and any patience some had left is now even thinner. The council heard all about it, too, during its monthly meeting on Tuesday, March 10th, as Donna Pepper, executive director of Paxton Main Street, urged swift, assertive action. We would urge the Council to bring this topic to front of mind and keep working on it, said Pepper, accompanied by Paxton Area Chamber of Commerce President Don Stack. We ask that you act on what can be done to make our downtown reach its full potential. Pepper said 10 storefronts within the 100 and 200 blocks of North and South Market Street are either vacant or look to be vacant with no active businesses in them. Among them is one actively listed for sale, while another is being shown to a prospective tenant this weekend, Pepper said, leaving 8 that we would like to see enforced, preferably assertively, by the city so they can be turned into actual office space or service or retail business. On behalf of both Paxton Main Street and the Paxton Area Chamber of Commerce, Pepper urged the council to prioritize all current avenues to enforce the vacant buildings ordinance, including timelines and fines, going forward, and consider updating the ordinance as needed. Under the ordinance, Pepper said, properties in the downtown business district must be retail establishments dealing directly with customers. That means those spaces should be either used in a different way, with customers coming in and out, or available for purchase as a building or available for rent. Pepper said the existence of so many vacant storefronts hurts the downtown image, an image that the city, its businesses, and various economic development organizations have been working hard to improve. In recent years, numerous buildings along Market Street have been improved inside and out, and the downtown streetscape received a $1 million makeover. The issue of vacant buildings in Paxton's downtown was highlighted in a report compiled by Main Street America and Illinois Main Street officials using the results of a survey they administered to the city's residents and business owners, as well as a September visit by representatives of the two groups who toured the downtown and met with local leaders to obtain even more feedback. They gave us a lot of positives: the revitalization of the downtown, the programming offered to the community, and the promotion of local businesses and tourism efforts, Pepper said. But their report and follow-up conversations, one of the main focuses that they brought up were the vacant storefronts in the downtown and or the perceived vacant storefronts downtown. In response to Pepper's comments, Mayor Bill Ingold said the issue would be addressed by the city's new code enforcement group, Equity Enterprise LLC, whose staff assigned to Paxton will be taxed with first inspecting properties downtown for non-compliance with property maintenance and building code requirements before further measures could be pursued. That was just turned over to them in the last 6 weeks, maybe, Ingalls said. So that's where we're at right now. Under city ordinance, vacant commercial buildings constitute a nuisance, and if they have been unoccupied for 6 or more months and lack water, electric, or sewer service, and they are considered nuisances if all the lawful manufacturing, commercial business operations, and or occupancy has ceased for 1 or more months, if the property has the presence or reoccurrence of uncorrected ordinance violations, and the property has materials on site in violation of city ordinances. In addition to enforcing the building ordinance, the vacant building ordinance, the city could address issues by enforcing its existing zoning code or by property maintenance code and issuing fines for the non-compliant use or neglect of buildings, City Attorney Tony Shearing said in 2022. While used only as a last resort, Shearing said, eminent domain is also an option the city could pursue if there is no cooperation. And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.